Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. This week, I am so happy I get to welcome back to your Partner in Success Radio author and speaker Bob Berg. Although for years he was best known for his book Endless Referrals, over the past few years it's been his business parable, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, that has captured the imagination of his readers. It was number 6 on the Wall Street Journal's business bestseller list just 3 weeks after its release. That's pretty phenomenal. And it reached number 9 on Business Week. It's been translated into 21 languages, and I think more. I'll have to ask Bob. And it's his fourth book to sell over 200,000 copies. Today we're going to be talking about The Go-Giver, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And it's not only a really nice way to live, but apparently it's a very financially profitable way to live. And I will tell you, I'm learning from it. And I'm learning that my business just gets better and better as I take these principles and I put them, most of them were already in play, but I'm learning to hone those. It's an amazing book. You really need to get it. So today, and I'm not going to go on just on and on because I really want Bob to speak instead of me chattering at you. Bob, welcome back. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Well, thank you. It's always great to speak with you, and you always have that nice, warm, soothing voice, and it's a delight to listen to you. So you can just go on talking. I'll kind of hang back.
Well, as I told you in the green room, I was coming, you know, you asked me if I was okay when I answered the phone. I was coming out of a sneezing fit, and I was leaning against my kitchen counter, sneezing, cursing, and laughing, which is a great way to start the day. So if I sound a little odd, that's why. I'm still kind of recovering.
Consider yourself
from
blessed.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, I know that I have been reading, I've been listening to The Go-Giver. You and I have talked about this before. We all learn in different ways. Mm-hmm. Some like to read, some like to listen, some like to watch videos. I don't fall in the video category, but I have the books in hard copy, and I have them in audio, and I pick up something different every single time, no matter which venue I'm reading or, you know, which way I'm reading it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Do you find that as well? Do people tell you that?
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking about it as you were saying that about your preferences, and I was thinking, you know, it's kind of interesting because there's all sorts of videos on the internet right now, and certainly on YouTube, and there's great information there. And, you know, as much as I do video and as much as I am a visual person as well as a kinesthetic, I don't really like to go on and watch videos. It's a little bit difficult for even to get in front of the computer and just watch videos. I don't enjoy that as much. I think I like to probably read first, and then I'd say listen to you know, I can listen to a book on tape, but I'd much rather read the book. But, you know, I figure if I'm driving, you know, I always want to be listening to something either motivational, informational, or educational. And sometimes I'll just listen to songs on the radio, too. So it's not as though I, you know, but yeah, I would say I'm sort of the same way. And I do find that there's people who I know they don't like to read. So, you know, they'll say that they've gotten The Go-Giver on audio and, you know, listen to it a few times, several times, and so forth. So I think everybody has their own, I guess, favored ways of taking in information.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, my business coach mentioned this yesterday. We were talking about a very similar topic. And she gets a lot of newsletters that she has been forwarding to me, and she was concerned that maybe she was overburdening me with, you know, information that I either already knew or, you know, just it wasn't welcome. And I said, you know, a lot of these people, I've known of them, I've either been on their newsletter or left their newsletter, but I'm finding new information now, maybe because today I'm ready, I'm willing. So every day for me is a different learning day. I may have heard or read something a week ago, a year ago, 10 years ago, but today when I hear it, see it, read it, I'm like, oh, okay, I got it.
Yeah, well, you know, you can read a book 10 years ago and pick it up again, and you see that there's so much there that's different. And, of course, it's not that that's different. It's that we're different. We've grown.
Exactly.
So we look at it a different way, and there's certain books I get, and I read it again the next month, and others I read it the next year, and others maybe 5 years before, and some I don't read again at all. But depending upon the book and how I've been affected by it or what I think I might need to know, it's definitely on the list to go through, or even, and I highlight and take a lot of notes and books when I read them. So a lot of times when I pick up a book after not having read it, let's say for 5 years, I'll really enjoy what I've highlighted or made notes or asked questions in the margins about, but I'll also notice that now I'm picking out things that I didn't highlight before, and now they have meaning to me. So it really, I think it's a matter of, as we continue to grow, the information just hits us a different way.
I agree with you, and that's why I never throw a book away.
Same here, yeah.
And I'm getting very bad about loaning them. It's like, nope, you won't bring it back. Go buy your own.
I no longer loan books. I will buy a book for someone, or I will suggest a book to someone, but I do not loan books anymore.
I have gotten that way, too.
Something about books that turn even the most responsible people into irresponsible people who don't, you know. So, yeah, that doesn't happen anymore. I value my books too much. They're my jewels.
There you go. Well, before we get too deep into this, for anybody who has not heard of you yet, and I find that difficult to believe, but if there's anybody new to this audience, can you give just a little bit of background of who you are, what you do, and where to find you on the web? And then I've got a ton of questions for you.
Yeah, I mean, very basically, I'm a former radio and television broadcaster who graduated into sales, did well in sales by just, you know, learning systems, learning how to do it from those who had done it before me. I'm not a big believer in reinventing the wheel. I'm also pretty sure I've never had an original thought in my life, but I've been really good at seeking out other people's thoughts. And I do have kind of a knack of systemizing things. And because I'm a slow learner by nature, I'm able to teach in such a way that most other people are able to catch on and utilize the information. So I think that's that one thing I kind of bring to the table there. And I've been speaking for, you know, now almost 25 years, and my website's burg.com, and we welcome people to come on by and hang out. We've got lots of archives of articles on the blog, and they can connect with me on social media and all those fun things.
I know. I was on your blog this morning. One of the things that I don't think I've asked you before, and to be honest, I couldn't find anything on the Internet. How in the world did you write The Go-Giver? What prompted you to... How did that unfold? I'm dying of curiosity.
Well, years ago, and this is back in, I guess, 94, my book Endless Referrals came out. And I wrote that because as I was speaking on business networking, which was kind of my forte, and that was before all the books. You know, now there's a whole bunch of books out on networking, and many of them are great. I love them. I learn from all of them. But back then... there weren't many books out there, and because of it positioned me sort of well in the marketplace, and it sold very well. It sold over, you know, 250,000 copies so far. It's been out for many years. It's in its third incarnation, last written in 2005, which is kind of funny because that was right before the Internet or before the social media really took hold. So I guess I should probably do a fourth edition of that pretty soon.
Yeah.
But Endless Referrals was my first real big selling book, and it's a how-to book. And I thought, you know, and I'd always loved reading parables. When I first got into sales, I think the first business parable I read was Og Mandino's Greatest Salesman in the World, and then, you know, James Klassen's The Richest Man in Babylon, and, of course, Spencer Johnson and Ken Blanchard had The One-Minute Manager, then The One-Minute Salesperson, and, you know, and all these great parables. And they're so fun to read because they're quick, they're interesting stories, and they teach lessons. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could come up with a parable based on the, you know, the sort of the basic premise of Endless Referrals, which is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. So I came up with the name The Go-Giver, which obviously is kind of positioned or branded contrary to the more well-known term The Go-Getter. And by the way, there was a great book called The Go-Getter written probably 50, 60 years ago by Peter Kine, one of my favorite books. But just to, as an aside, as a parenthesis, if I may, being a go-getter and a go-giver are not in any way opposites. They work hand in hand. We like people. John David Mann, my great author, who I'll talk about in a moment, great co-author, John and I always say, you know, we want people to be go-getters and go-givers. You know, go-getters take action. They get things done. You can have all the greatest thoughts in the world and all the greatest intent in the world, Denise. And, you know, you and I are both business people. So is everyone listening to this. And we know that without putting action into the mix, nothing's going to happen. So we love go-getters as well as go-givers. The opposite of a go-giver is not a go-getter. The opposite of a go-giver is a go-taker. That's the person who sort of feels entitled to just take without having added value to the person, to the process, to the situation, the relationship, what have you. And we all know plenty of people like that, and they can be good people, but they tend to be sort of frustrated by the fact that they never really seem to obtain that kind of success they feel they deserve. Even when they do, sometimes it typically isn't very long-lasting, and yet they tend to look at everybody else as being naive. So when we say go-giver, we're really just talking about that man or woman who has either learned or intuitively knew that it's that person who can shift their focus, who can go from an I focus to an other focus, who can focus on providing value to others. That's the person who really accomplishes the most and has the most success in terms of whether it's financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, you know, all those areas. And so that's really what we mean with go-giver. But anyway, so I had a few sort of sketchy characters, not even written, more just kind of on paper, but nothing spectacular. But anyway, I began to write the book, and it took me all of about 1 minute to realize that there's a huge, huge difference between writing a how-to book, such as Endless Referrals, and trying to write a parable or fictional story, such as The Go-Giver. And I knew I just really wasn't qualified to do it. It wasn't within my strength zone. So I fortunately knew this guy named John David Mann. And John was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I used to write for, and he was also the ghost writer.
I wondered how you met him.
Yeah, and John was the ghost writer of some very popular books, but people in the, you know, most people didn't know who he was, but people who sort of knew and had been around the industry knew John was a great writer, and he's a brilliant guy. And even as an editor-in-chief, you know, he would edit my stories, and he was always so, you know, nice and so humble. You know, he'd write back every month with the corrections, and instead of just making the corrections and that was it, he'd always say, you know, is it okay? I did this, I did that, I put this here. And our running joke became that every month I'd write him back and say, John, not only is it okay, you write my stuff better than I write my stuff. And, you know, and everybody else knows that about him too. So he was the only guy I thought of that I wanted to co-author this, and really more than co-author, he was the lead storyteller. I mean, I asked him to, you know, to really take the lead with this. And well, I'll tell you, he just did such I'm more of a how-to author. That's what I do. I speak in terms of step one, step two, step three. John's a magnificent storyteller and a great guy, so it worked out very well.
I wondered how you met, and I'm so glad you told me that. He's actually coming on the show pretty soon, too.
Oh, good. Yeah, you'll love John. John, you know, provides a great look at not only The Go-Giver, but, you know, now he's of course, co-authored many books with many people that have just gone, you know, New York Times, huge bestseller, and I'm glad he's finally getting the, you know, I don't want to say notoriety, that's the wrong word, notability, that he deserves for you know, being such a terrific writer.
Oh, that is so nice. You know, I've been reading the Go-Giver blog. I read a lot of stuff. In fact, this morning I was on your blog and you mentioned, I think it was John Maxwell, because didn't he win the Go-Giver Award 1 year?
Oh, well, you know what? We don't really do a whole lot on the GoGiver blog. My blog is at berg.com, BURG.com/blog.
Mm.
I post about 2 or 3 times a week on that. And John has his own blog. We really very rarely now post on the GoGiver blog.
Well, I found something interesting over there, and I ran off to Audible and downloaded a book. Look, because of you this morning, I'm $100 broke.
Why did you get something from John Maxwell?
You, him, I just went on a spree
at
Audible.
Funny.
So where
well,
do
John,
I
yeah, last well? Year we had a we have a retreat that we've been putting on for I think the last 6 years. Our last one was a few weeks ago actually, but John was our every year what we do is we have a GoGiver Lifetime Achievement Award winner. The first year was Zig Ziglar, and we awarded that to Zig at one of our events. Oh, yeah, he's great. Last year was John Maxwell, and this year, at the one we had a few weeks ago, was Colleen Barrett, who's the president emeritus of Southwest Airlines. And she spoke at the event. She spoke for about 45 minutes and just wowed the audience. And what was really cool was that Herb Kelleher, the founder of Southwest Airlines and the CEO, emeritus, he showed up too. And the two of them were just so great because they, mixed and mingled with everyone, and they made themselves accessible to everyone, and just everybody fell in love with the two of them. Two more authentic people you could not find.
I really wanted to go to that event, and it just was not going to work on my calendar, but I did follow along. I had a great time, reading all the tweet chatter.
Yeah, people were tweeting away at that.
Yeah.
But yeah, John Maxwell was our second award winner. Yeah, he's had such a profound effect on my life. Yeah, I think, I don't know how many of his books I've read, but oh my gosh, I've read a bunch of them. And I can think of things that happen, that I can refer right back to saw this in his book.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just such a brilliant, of course, Zig was one of the first people I ever began to study.
Zig Ziglar. I mean, I have a thing for Southern accents anyway. I just like them. And he has got that great, when you hear him speak, it's Zig Ziglar.
You got to know that it's your attitude and not your aptitude that will ultimately determine your altitude.
I love to listen to him. I mean, this is how I picked up years ago. I would pick up his tapes. I mean, before CDs, the little plastic ones. What were those that you put in your little player?
Cassettes. The cassette tapes, sure.
I still have them. They're yellow.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah, and I couldn't play them. I don't have a player, but I picked them up at garage sales and went, I love this man. And every time I came across anything Zig Ziglar, I dove right into it.
Yeah, and I could listen to Zig just, not nonstop. I can just, I can just keep playing his tapes. It was a real thrill to introduce Zig when he came, to our event, because he spoke at our event a few years ago when he was received the GoGiver Lifetime Achievement Award. And he had an injury which has really caused him to have significant short-term memory loss, and he's no longer really traveling and speaking anymore, but even for the last few years he was doing that. What he would do is his daughter, Julie, would usually interview him on stage and ask questions, and what we did when he came was we had a sort of a panel up there, and his wife, the redhead, she was on stage, and his son Tom, who's really become like a brother to me, he was on stage, and Zig was on stage, and we just sort of all interviewed him, and it was just it was wonderful. And again, that's a family that they're the same off stage as on stage and in the books. I mean, everybody just loved them. They were accessible to everyone and just had a kind word for everyone. So class is evident.
So he kind of, Zig Ziglar kind of embodies what a GoGiver is. He's a very nice person, but he's not a pushover, and he gives enormously of himself. Is that correct?
Well, remember, Zig Ziglar had the saying, "See, you can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want." So, that's really that's really the embodiment, that you're shifting your focus. You're focused on providing value to others. And you know, John and I say in the in Go Give or Sell More, we have a saying: money is an echo of value. Money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which really means nothing more, Denise, than the value comes first. And when you're focused on providing value to someone rather than the focus being on the money, when you're focused on the value, they understand that, and they know this consciously or unconsciously, and they like you more, they trust you more, they respect you more, and they're much more likely to exchange their money for the value that they feel confident you can provide them.
Right.
So, you know, you focus on the value, and the money is simply a natural and direct result of the value that's been provided. On the other hand, if they can sense, and they always can, I think, on some level, that you're focused more on making a commission than you are on serving their needs, well, you know, the chances are they're not going to do that. So, yeah, I think Zig is the embodiment of someone who, you know, through his career has been just so focused on providing value to others. And just like law number two, the law of compensation, your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. You know, where law number one says to provide more in use value than what you take in payment. So the other person feels great about the transaction. They feel like they got more value than what they paid for while you still make a significant profit. Law number two says, you know, it's not just the value, it's also touching the lives of many people with that value. And that's important because providing that great value to one person probably isn't going to make you a significant income. It's providing that value to many people that's going to, you know, you have someone who is, let's say, someone who is a virtual assistant, and this person charges.
Anybody you know?
Huh?
Anybody
you know? We'll call her. So we don't use real names. We'll call her Lanice.
Super Denise.
Yeah, Lanice. So it's not actually Denise. We'll say Lanice. And so nobody thinks I'm, you know. And so Lanice Briffitz. And
sounds like a nice gal.
Yeah. And you know, so when someone hires you to do something for them, you're charging them a certain amount of money, but what they're doing is they're, you know, and let's say you charge them X amount of dollars an hour or X dollars for a project, however you would do it. Well, you know, they're not just getting what they paid for, they're getting more than what they paid for, because you're giving them excellence, you're giving them consistency, you're giving them attention, you're giving them empathy, you're giving them value, you're giving them, you know, gratitude, you're making their life easier, so you're saving them time from doing the things that they don't want to be doing or they're not good at. So you're actually giving them more in value than what they're than what they're paying you. And of course, as you're doing that, you are making a profit. And that's the kind of relationship you want to have with everyone with whom you do business, regardless of the business you're in. You want to give them such a great buying experience. You want to give them more in value, or as Wallace Wattles, author of Science of Getting Rich, the 1910 classic, as he used to call it, giving them more in use value than what you take from them in cash value, that both parties not only come out ahead, they come out way ahead. In fact, the essence of a free market exchange is that both the buyer and the seller come out better than when they went in. And that's the whole beauty of it.
Exactly. Well, going back to the GoGiver blog, and I know, and I can see by the dates on it, it's not updated tremendously quickly, but what is on there is good stuff.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say. But one of the things that I took away from it recently was that, and you said, remember that your income is a reflection of how effectively you touch people's lives, which is what we're talking about. Creating and adding value is the bullet. Being a good person is the gun. And I have to tell you, I had Larry Winget on last week, and
we
circle back. Me too. And we, you know, the thing with Larry is he doesn't have any filters, and neither do I. So I have to be careful. I have to go, don't say that. Careful, don't say that. My mother has told me all of my life that my mouth is going to get me into trouble. My feet can't leave me out of. So far, I'm pretty quick, but one day I'm going to get it. But, But I love Larry, and we were talking about a year of success, and I definitely want to get to that a little bit later in the program. But he was talking about you too, because I said, how in the world did you gather, how did you choose these guys, and, you know, why? And what he said about you I thought was pretty interesting. He said that you are one of the nicest people he's ever known, period. And he was dead serious about it. But at the same time, he described you as one of the smartest people he knows, business people he knows.
Wow.
So basically, I think what he was saying was that you're a heck of a nice guy, and you will give, but you're not going to take a whole lot of stuff. You're not going to tolerate a lot of stuff. You're a smart businessman, but you give and give and give.
You know, and I appreciate that. And here's what it is Denise. It's often confused by people, I think, that because someone is, let's say, nice or kind or courteous or whatever, that they're some kind of pushover. And I often say to people, and I've tweeted this before and put it on Facebook, and this always gets, you know, a lot of responses from people. I say, if you're nice and being taken advantage of, it's not because you're nice. It's because you're doing things in such a way that you allow yourself to be taken advantage of. So there's no natural cause and effect between being nice and being a pushover. And we often say that, you know, even when talking about the third law of the go-giver, the law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. This has nothing to do with being a martyr, being anybody's doormat, or being self-sacrificial in any way. It's simply good business. It's good life to focus on providing value to others. To the degree you make other people's lives better, happier, more fulfilling, richer, what have you, that's the degree that it's going to happen for you as well. And it's interesting with Larry, because people say, well, you know, you and Larry are polar opposites, and we both
that's
will say
what he said.
Yeah, you, exactly. And it's not true, because if you sort of distill everything that Larry and I teach, the principles are the same. It's simply the way we communicate it.
Right.
You know, when I introduced Larry, you know, and people know me for being tactful and, you know, trying not to hurt, you know, hurt people's feelings and unnecessarily, or, you know, do it. So when I got up to introduce Larry, I said, now, you know, all of you in this room know me, and you know that, you know, when I speak, I try to be tactful, and I try to, you know, to the best that I can spare people's feelings or make them feel good about themselves, and I keep that in mind when I speak. This won't be an issue with our next speaker. And, you know, Larry laughed from the side because, you know, that's Larry. Larry's going to get up there and he's just going to say, this is how it is, and, you know, and he's kind of the in your face. Our styles are a lot different, but if you're, you know, our actual business principles and life principles, I think, are pretty similar.
I think so, too. I get a kick out of him because he will just flat tell you how the corn grows.
Oh, it's so funny. Yeah, it really is. And everybody just loved him at the event. I mean, everybody's just laughing. And you know, because he does. He speaks truth. And, you know, not everything you have to agree with Larry. And he knows you're not going to agree with everything he says. But, you know, you know that's Larry. And you can either accept it or not, and most of the time, I do agree with him, you know. I mean, it just, he's great, and I think I've read all of his books, and there's a lot of wisdom in there.
There is, and, you know, he's one of the guys that I like to listen to. Again,
yeah,
that
me
voice.
Too.
You know, there's people who have very, very distinctive voices,
mm-hmm.
and half the time the ride and the enjoyment is just listening to how
mm-hmm.
they talk, you know, how
mm-hmm.
they clarify their positions, and I get a big kick out. My cat likes him. I mean, that's all I have to say about it. My cat
Well, then you know it's
him.
Good.
It's got to be good. And I love to listen to you as well because you have a great voice, a very distinctive voice, but you're soothing.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I listen to you, and I'm not being taken off and going, what? What did he just say? You know, and having to stop and think about it, I'm absorbing what you're talking about, and I love to listen. In fact, I have you on my iPod right now.
Well,
so
I am honored to be in your iPod.
You're in my iPod. You're in my ear.
Thank you.
Listen, I read recently, I've been doing a lot of online reading about you and Larry because of the whole year of success, which, you know, I've been I'm enrolled in that and love it. But I read an article in the New York Times, and I think this was last year this article came out, is in the New York Times business blog about a high-tech entrepreneur who recently took her business through a major crash course in course correction. And your book figured in that. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, I think I do, because I think we actually featured her in the Go Giver blog.
You did, and that's where I found it.
About a year and a half, 2 years ago. Yeah, that was a great story. We appreciated appreciated knowing that.
Yeah, I mean she sat down, took a good long look at what she was doing, and then had everybody in her office read your book, The Go Giver.
Yeah, and you know, and I think just from what I read of her, that is pretty much how she does operate. I think it was just sort of a reminder of what she already knew. And we found a lot of people like that with The Go Giver. In fact, when it took off, and it did take off rather fast, what happened was it wasn't so much that all of a sudden people who really needed to read it found it and passed it along. It was the people who already were conducting their businesses that way. And because it was in a story form that was entertaining, they felt very comfortable passing that along to others. And so we had CEOs and so forth buying hundreds of books and thousands of books and utilizing it within their company and having me in to speak and the whole bit. But they were already doing it. It wasn't anything new to them. It was just sort of defining what they were already doing.
Believe me, I know, because I heard of you first. One of my team members said, "Have you read this book?" And I had never heard of it. And he said, "You've got to read this book." I said, "Okay."
Wow.
And then a week later, "Did you read the book?" "No." "Did you buy the book?" "No." And he said, "Buy the book." "Okay." And I bought the book. And I went, "Whoa, okay."
Wow,
so, you know, after that, I was hooked. But somebody in my team, in my sphere of influence, if you will, told me about the book. And you're right, we're already living like that. Well, this is how we live our lives. But it's just such a great reminder. And, you know, there are always, I call it a primer, I guess. There's, even if you know what you know, sometimes you need that refresher course.
Oh, I know I do, absolutely. So many books that I read that I, you know, and a lot of them do teach me new information, but a lot of them teach me things that I've already learned or maybe was doing and just hadn't done lately. And I said, "Oh, yeah, I know that. Why aren't I doing this?"
Exactly. Listen, let's talk about the economy a little bit. I mean, we can't avoid it, can we?
No, and we don't have to.
We shouldn't.
No, because it's, you know, the ostrich, you know, that buries their head in the sand, they may not see the bad stuff around them, but it certainly doesn't mean it's not there. So it's,
I think it's good
to kind of have an idea of what is going on.
Well, and here's what I'm experiencing this to some degree, even though I don't need to at this moment, and I know many, many people are experiencing, I guess what I can only describe as a low-level sense of dread. We don't know what's coming down the pike. We know that our government is a little dysfunctional. I'm going to be tactful.
Yeah, that was very tactful.
Wasn't it, though? My teeth hurt. seriously. But, you know, there are a lot of things going on. But here is what I think, and I would love to get you to respond on this. I think that there is no better time in America for entrepreneurship to take hold, take root, and grow. And I'm seeing a lot of people coming to me, coming to my industry, my two industries, saying, "You know what, I've worked in an office all of my life, but I don't want to do it anymore. For one thing, the job's not there, the business is gone. I don't want to be in a position where I'm depending on a paycheck that may not be there. I have stuff to offer." So with the economy being what it is these days and with American ingenuity kind of, I think, catching hold again, how does the Go-Giver principle help people find jobs, make more sales, become successful entrepreneurs? I mean, how can it help them?
Well, you know, Mark Sanborn, who's a great friend of mine and another person who spoke at the event, he's the author of The Fred Factor and Up, Down, and Sideways, and some great books, and he's also on A Year of Success. Mark said something I thought was very profound. Well, he often says very profound things. But this one was, create value that is sustainable in any economy. And I think that's a really neat thing to look at, because the question we can all ask is, what is our, another friend of mine, Mike Littman, coined this term, what is our asset of value? You know, what is it that we really bring to the marketplace? and you know, find a way to take what we bring to the marketplace and create a business around it. Or, you know, if you want to go to work for someone else and bring that value, that's fine too. Remember, even when you go to work for someone else, they're your client.
That's
what it comes down to. So, you know, we're all either entrepreneurs or intrapreneurs. And so, you know, it's a matter of how we position ourselves. But whether you're a worker, whether you're in the employ of someone else, or whether you're a consultant that contracts work out, or, you know, what have you, you're always in business for yourself. So how do you create that value? Or, you know, so first it's actually recognizing your value. It's recognizing what your strengths are, what you love to do, you know, what you enjoy doing. And usually the way we're created, it tends to work out that what we're good at is also what we enjoy. And it's not always the case, but it's often the case. And what's interesting is sometimes even if it doesn't align, there are other ways to make it align. For example, you know, I always one of my dreams growing up was to play third base for the Boston Red Sox, and I think I really could have done it, except for one thing: I had no talent. And that hurt.
Sorry.
But what I could have done was, had I really wanted to have a career in baseball, of course I could have gone into the front office, you know, in team management or sports reporting, or, you know, had some, nowadays, you know, it'd be have a baseball blog, or, you know, or what have you. So there's always ways to take what you do, find the value you can create, and then, you know, market it to others. Fortunately, there are also many people who have great information on how to take that product or service that you have, or what have you, and be able to market it. So it doesn't mean it's necessarily easy, but it's there. And fortunately, as let me back that up for a moment and just say, although I think that our government, and again, this is really whether it's Democrats or Republicans, it doesn't seem to make a difference, as difficult as they make it to be able to operate a business and create value, the free market system still works, because we still actually have it's still a mostly free market system. And the power of the free market is actually so strong that we can still, that in America today, anyone can still start with nothing, create something of value, market that something of value, and do very, very well.
And these days, and this has only happened in about the past 10 years, to be honest, I've been a web developer for about 10, 11 years. You can start up a business with darn near nothing much. You can put up a blog. If you can do it yourself, it doesn't cost you much. You don't need necessarily to have a brick-and-mortar business, which is a huge shift from what it was 10 years ago. So just in a decade, we've made massive strides in how we do business, you know, how we can do business on the Internet. And
absolutely.
If you're industrious, you can do it. Absolutely can. I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and you know, and that's why I'm always disappointed when people say, oh well, you know, only a certain percentage of people have a chance to succeed in America. No, that's not true at all.
No.
There's just so many stories of people who've come out of nowhere and who just, you know, how did they possibly do it? You know, and yet they did. And it just shows if someone really wants too badly enough, and again, that's not everybody does want too badly enough, and that's okay too. There's no judgments either way. It's just that, you know, you've still got to have the desire and you've still got to work at it. It's not a matter of just wishing it. You know, you've got to be both a go-giver and a go-getter.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to get your butt out of that bed every day and go do something. If it's mowing grass, go mow grass if that's what it takes to put groceries on the table and build your website at night, or, you know,
exactly,
make purses at night, whatever it is that you're going to do. You know, there's a lot of hours in the day. People say, oh, you know, I just don't have time. That's baloney. That is pure unadulterated baloney.
Yeah, well, I agree.
What
it really means is that what they're really, I think, saying is, based either on my lack of desire to do what it takes in order to get what I want, I don't have the time. In other words, I would rather do X rather than Y, and that's what I'm going to do. Or based on my lack of belief that I have what it takes, I'll say I don't have the time because at least that makes me feel better. And again, there's no judgment or anything. It's just a matter of this is just what it is. You know, and this is in a sense, it's basic economics. I bring it back to, you know, to that in a sense to say that in terms of the buying process, that one very immutable economic law is that people will exchange their money for that which they feel is of equal or hopefully greater value than the money they're exchanging it for. Well, remember, people will exchange their time for that which they feel is of equal or hopefully greater value than the time they're giving up. You know, they may want to watch the ball game, but if they feel that the, you know, spending that couple of hours doing something more productive, you know, reading a good book or what you were saying, making
a website or purses or the blog,
or what have you, is going to pay off for them, and they want it badly enough, that's what they'll do. So it's always choices. And, you know, and that's where, and I think you were saying, and I agree with you, you know, I don't have the patience for someone to say I don't have time. When it's not that they don't have time, it's that they choose not to do it. And if someone just says that they choose not to do it, I'm fine with it. I mean, you know, that's it's none of my beeswax. But I always do like being, I think this is what Larry Winget gets to a lot with his, when he speaks, you know, it's like, hey, you know, you have a right to stay where you are or do what you, or be broke or do whatever you want to do. You know, if you're spending more money than what you're taking in, you're going to be broke. You know, there's, I mean, there's not a whole lot of, you know, excuses don't matter. You know, things happen and it's horrible and there's reasons for things, but that's just how it is. If you're spending more money, and it's the same with any, it's the same with an individual, it's the same with a small business, it's the same with a big business, and it's the same with a country. If you're spending more money than you're bringing in and you're doing it knowingly, which is really the only way to do it, knowingly, you're going to go out of business or you're going to go broke or you're going to be defunct. And we can come up with all the excuses we want, but, you know, I'd rather just someone say, you know, well, this is what I just would rather do, and that's what I'm going to do. Okay.
Exactly. Well, you know, and talking about Larry Winget, he sums it all up pretty cogently in one sentence, and that is, your life is your own damn
business. Right. He's good with titles, isn't he? You're broke because you want to be. Your life is your own.
You kids, people are idiots, and I can prove it. You know, I've been asking him for a couple of years, please be my ringtone. All I want when my cell phone rings is to hear your voice say, Denise Griffith says your life is your own damn fault, but you won't do it. I might have to fake it. But let's talk about A Year of Success, because that is a program that, you and I were talking about this a little bit ago. I don't like videos. I genuinely don't like them. I'm just not visually stimulated, apparently. I don't go to movies. I watch very little television. And videos just bore me, to be perfectly blunt about it. Most videos, I'm like, really? And I've actually gotten out of newsletters that I have been subscribed to for a long time, because they've gone to a straight video format. I'm gone. If I can't read it, I'm out of there. So you guys have put together this phenomenal program, and I actually watched the videos, and we'll go into that later. But talk about A Year of Success, how it came to be, what it is. I mean, I think it's a phenomenal idea.
Oh, thank you. The basics is that it's four of us: Larry Winget, Mark Sanborn, Sally Hogshead, and myself. And what we do is we take turns each week delivering to the person's email box, a 3-minute video with an idea, either business, personal, or both. And then from there, the person downloads two what we call action items or action ideas. And that is the two things, based on the video, the assignment, if you will, for them to focus on and do for that week. And that if they will do, you know, first week it's Larry, then it's Mark, I think, then it's Sally, then it's me, and then it goes back to Larry. And so each of us have 13 videos. And again, they're 3 minutes, so they're not real long. They're just kind of bite-sized, and then the two things. So if somebody will do this for a week and just kind of play with that for the week, after 52 weeks, they are going to be significantly improved in different aspects of their life. you know, Larry's focus is on responsibility and money and different things. Mine's more on influence and sales. Mark is on, I'd say, leadership and influence. And Sally is just an amazingly brilliant person when it comes to personal branding, and what she calls it is fascination, you know, or mm-hmm. your fascination points. And her book, Fascinate, is one of the best I've ever read in my life. And she is just brilliant. And so the four of us sort of coming at it with a little bit of overlap. And sometimes we say
that matters.
No, I think it's
because
good.
You hear something from one person differently than you do from another
person. And you know, and there's some things that you'll hear from Mark and me that's a little tiny bit of a different spin. Or we'll say, you know, you may have heard something from Sally, and then when Larry says something, I'd say, do these go together or is there a dichotomy there? And it's okay. And all of that is great. And so by doing this, you know how it is with this sort of like compound interest. It's like a little bit at a time. So we don't come on saying, oh, you know, do this and you're going to change your life and be a millionaire or whatever. No, it's just these are good ideas. They're actionable ideas. And if you improve, you know, in yourself a little bit every single week after 52 weeks, after a year, you know, you've gone from point A to point B. And we kept it very, very affordable. It's only $147. And it was really funny because, you know, there's a lot of programs out there that are thousands of dollars or hundreds, and it's okay. I mean, if they're getting more.
I've invested in some of them.
Yeah, well, and my feeling is if they're giving more in value than what they take in payment, that's fine. I have no problem with it at all. But what was interesting is Larry told the story, and we have this in one of our promotional videos on the site. Larry was talking to one of the internet gurus about this, and they were saying, well, how much are you charging? And Larry said, $147. And they said, $147 a month? That's it? That's crazy. You could be charging much more. And Larry goes, no, actually, it's $147 for the year. And the person just went, you know, and it's not because we're, you know, trying to give this away or anything. I mean, believe me, we make a great profit, you know, from every sale. But we found we could, you know, we felt as a business decision we could price this at $147, which really anyone can afford. As Larry says, no one's going to get hurt at $147. And yet you're going to get so much more value out of it than what you've paid that we can bring this to the masses. And that's really kind of what we wanted to do, is bring this to the masses so it was affordable and, you know, really make a difference with it. So we're excited about it. It's catching on pretty well.
Well, and here's the thing, and I think I told you this already. Yeah, you know, I eagerly logged in. I was number 20. I was like the 20th buyer. I think I was right in there. And you know, I jumped in and, you know, because I had to wait. You know, Larry's video wasn't up just yet, but I got Larry's video. And now I, this has been 5 weeks, right? We're into week five. I have changed my morning habits around. I'm not a breakfast eater, which I'm constantly being, you know, people yell at me for that. But I don't like food in the morning. It just doesn't look right to me. I'm like, no. And I'm not really a coffee drinker, so, you know, I jump up in the morning, I grab my big glass of water, and I instantly go to work, which is, you know, the sign of a high-functioning workaholic, and I get that. But I have changed my habits around now to where I come in here, and I'll either bring a cup of tea or my glass of water, and instead of going to the internet, checking my email, which I always do, I have actually just now, I go in. For the last 5 weeks, I log in every morning, and I may listen to the same video. Well, what I've done is, you know, week one, I went through that, and I did the, you know, downloaded the PDF, and I, you know, listened to Larry for 5 days in a row, six, seven. I work 7 days a week. I'm not going to lie. So, you know, I listened to that, and then it was Mark, and then it was Sally, and then it was you. And what I do now, you know, for what was just, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes a day, is now up to probably about 10 or 15 minutes, and I've set aside that time. Because what I'll do now is go back and listen to, you know, I think Bob had something that I didn't quite catch the other day. Let me go back. So I'm actually working, I work my way backwards through just the 5 videos now, and I know when there gets to be a lot more videos, I'm going to have to be, you know, within that 15 minutes, I'm going to have to pick and choose what I really need for that day. But I'm finding that by spending that time every day before I do anything else, it It makes my day look different, I have to be honest.
Wow, that's what a heck of a compliment. Thank you.
Well, it's the truth. I'm like Larry. I just kind of say what I think.
And by the way, just so people know that even though you're on the fifth week, it starts at week one whenever, you know, the person starts. So if somebody does it in, you know, 2 months from
they're
now.
Not
it's
overwhelmed. They're gonna,
right. It's going
right.
to start at week one whenever they – it's 52
right.
weeks from whenever you start.
Right. Well, just so y'all know, I'm 5 weeks ahead of you. Nah, 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 nah.
All right. No.
Yeah. But, I mean, it really – like I say, I'm not a visual learner. I just am not. My style of learning is to get in, break it, and go, put it back together and then throw the spare parts away. I've always done that. Don't read the instructions. Don't, you know, it's just – that's just how I learn. I actually sit back with my cup of tea or my glass of water and a cat draped over my keyboard – and I actually watch these darn videos. I am really enjoying them. And it could be because I know you guys, but I think more it's the message. I think I'm actually learning something, which is always, it's a fascinating process.
Yeah, well, yeah, I love to learn, and I know you're that same way. And
yeah.
You know. That's why you're on the fast track. That's, you know,
I am.
Learners love to learn, and you know, it keeps building upon. So.
We do. Well, I think this was a great idea, and I really encourage anybody that, you know, has the $147 to, you know, maybe not go buy that purse at Macy's. Get that. Seriously. You can find the money somewhere. I promise you, you can. So what did we miss anything? I mean, we've talked about the Go-Giver, which I love. Go give or sell more. Is there anything in there that you would like to share with the audience?
You know, not really. Other than, I think in a sense we just take the laws of the go giver and we apply them in a pragmatic way, and we give plenty of examples of people who've done that and who are doing it every day. I think the biggest thing in there that we try to do is show people who are in sales why they are in a very righteous profession, because we help them look at sales a little differently than they might, because sales has a fairly bad name to it in general.
Yeah, you always think of the car salesman like, ooh.
Well, yeah, and you know, when you think of it, the really successful car salespeople are loved by their clients, and yet, you know, it's like insurance salespeople. You see the really successful insurance, they're loved by, why? They're always focused on value. And yet, look how many people in car sales come across in such a negative way that just feeds into the stereotype. That buying a car so often is just not a happy experience. And that, you know, that gives sales a bad name, where really, if they take a lesson from the people who are successful, they see that it's those people who just take such great care of their customers that people refer business to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's so much that's counterintuitive, as we say at the beginning. So people often think of sales as trying to convince someone to buy something they don't want or need, when in reality selling is exactly the opposite. It's finding out what someone does want or need and simply helping them to get it. You know, people think sales is taking advantage of others. It's not. It's giving people more advantage through your products or services. And that, you know, they think that at its essence, selling is about taking, but it's not. It's about giving. And here's the thing. I actually mean that literally when I say selling is giving. And people say, no, don't you mean figuratively? And I say, no, I mean literally. Here's why. The old English root of the word sell is selan, which meant to give. So when you sell, you give. Now, someone might say, well, okay, I get that, but didn't you just kind of trick us there? I mean, what are you really giving when you're in sales? Well, I would say to anybody who's in sales, when you're in the selling process, what are you giving? You're giving time, attention, counsel, education, empathy, and most of all, value. So when you're selling, you're giving. So you should be proud of being in selling. And when you are, there's going to be – see, if you really don't feel that selling is a righteous thing to do and you're in sales, there's a disconnect there that's costing you a lot of money, and it's costing your customers in that they're not going to get to receive the value from you. So,
you know, I actually get that. And for years I would have people tell me, Denise, you are a natural-born salesperson. And I would be highly insulted. Yeah, I mean, I was like, I am not, take it back. Put your tongue back. But as it turns out, when you're doing everything that you just listed, you're naturally selling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've actually had people come to me and say, oh, I need this and I need that. I need a website and I need an opt-in page. And, you know, I look at their business model. I look at where they are emotionally and financially and, you know, social media-wise. And say, no, you really don't. And I have talked people out of doing business with me for
mm-hmm.
right then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what you need to do. This is the foundation you need to build. Then we need to talk again. And they always come back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm not going to take their money when they aren't. If you're not ready to work with me, I'm not going to let you work with me. I'm going to show you how to do what you need to do, and then I'd love to work with you, but when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that fails, but I didn't know it.
And see, there's people who will look at that, oh, that's horrible, that's naive. You're, no. First of all, it's the right thing to do, but secondly, it's the profitable thing to do, because
mm-hmm.
that person is going to come back to you. And even
yeah.
if they don't, they're going to refer someone to you. And even if they don't, it still doesn't matter. When you can say no when you should say no, you're going to be much more persuasive saying yes when you should say yes.
Well, and it doesn't make your stomach hurt.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, seriously, it doesn't. I mean, if you're taking somebody's money knowing good and well that they're not ready or they really can't afford it, oh, my God.
Of course. Well, then you're not a salesperson. You're a con artist.
Yeah.
And that's what people, you know, when they talk about the salespeople who give selling a bad name, it's not really the salespeople. It's the con artists that do that.
Yeah.
And so, and that's not selling. And so, you know, it's one of those things where what John and I tried to do in this book is kind of reframe selling so people could go about it in the right way and feel good about what they were doing, knowing that it, again, isn't just some Casper milk toasty thing where, you know, oh, I feel good about it and not making any money. No.
Right.
You're feeling great about it, you're doing the right thing, and you're making more money.
Right. Once you are able to clearly and cogently state your value proposition, it's up to the person who is on the other end of the phone or the, you know, the internet to say, oh, I want to work with you, but you have to
right.
be able to make them understand what's in it for them, truly. So
yeah.
Do you mind if we go over the five laws of the Go-Givers? We covered two. We've got about four or five more minutes.
No, not at all. I mean, basically, and I'll do a very quick Reader's Digest version. and the law of value says that your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment, which sounds counterintuitive, as though that's a recipe for bankruptcy, but of course it's not. It means you're giving more in use value than what you're taking in cash value. And so that person feels great about it, and you make a healthy profit. Law number two is the law of my mind just blanked, the law of compensation, which says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. Again, it's not enough just to provide value to one person. You've also got to touch the lives of many people with the exceptional value you provide. We could say that, you know, exceptional value plus significant reach equals very high compensation.
Mm-hmm.
The law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. This simply means that, you know, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And the most powerful, the fastest, the quickest way to elicit those feelings toward you and others is by focusing not on yourself, but focusing on other people and providing value to them. The law of authenticity says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. It means that, you know, everything you do is in alignment with who you are. You come across from your true core, your true essence, rather than being I guess the Latin term would be a phonus bolognus. And so very important to be yourself. And the law of receptivity says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. That's simply understanding that just like breathing out and breathing in, giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem. The key is focus on the giving. Focus on the giving part and allow the receiving.
Now, explain that one. I believe I get it, but I'd like for you to expand on that.
Well, too often, you know, people are pretty good at the giving value part. That's what they focus on. And yet they struggle with the receptivity aspect. Now, a lot of that, keep in mind, goes back to a poor relationship with money, which is typically on an unconscious level. Because if you ask most people if they'd like to make a lot of money, absolutely, sure, no question. But how often do you see people that, you know, don't charge enough for their services, they don't value themselves, they have a relationship with money, that money is bad or money is evil and this and that. And as Randy Gage, who writes the Prosperity blog, you know, says that it's the memes, the mind viruses. And really, we get these from all over the place. You know, whether it, for most people, I'd say it's a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, the news media, television shows, movies, where, you know, if you, and Randy does a great vignette on this regarding movies, but practically every big selling blockbuster movie usually has kind of two different types of people in it. There's the good people who are poor, but they're happy. Right, they're always poor but happy, and they're always being put down, stepped on, stepped over, and taken advantage of by the rich people who are mean and nasty and cowardly and have no soul. And we see this everywhere. This permeates our society. Look at right now how the wealthy are being made to look like the villains. So we're seeing this, and people buy into it. And so, you know, if you really believe that money is evil, are you going to allow yourself to do things that allow you to make money? And so, you know, we have to understand, providing that you focused on providing value to others, you've earned the right, not the entitlement, but the right to receive in like measure.
You know, you just made me think of something, and that's that term filthy rich. Where in the world did that come from? Filthy and rich, how did those two words get put together?
Well, exactly. That's a great point. That's a great point.
It seems to me that we should celebrate people who go, hey, I did something really cool, and I made a lot of money doing it.
Free enterprise-based economy, and of course, right now we have a lot of corporatism or cronyism going on, in which the special interests and big companies actually buy influence from politicians in order to have special rules and regulations made. That's what happened with the Wall Street meltdown, the whole banking thing. That was not capitalism and free markets. That was a total corporatism in which the Wall Street and government were basically in bed. I mean, and yet most people think that was capitalism and free markets. It was absolutely not. But right now, most people don't really understand that. And because of that, people are whereas in a free enterprise, the only way you can make a lot of money in a free enterprise, in a true free enterprise-based economy, is by providing value to others in touching the lives of a lot of people. It's the only way you can do it, because remember, in a true free market, nobody is forced to buy from you.
Not yet.
That's the key to understand.
Yeah.
So the only way you can do it, not out of any kind of, you know, out of any kind of altruism or anything else, if all you care about is making money, still you can only do it by pleasing other people and bringing a product or service to them that they want, that they value enough to exchange their money for. So really, there's so many of these mind viruses going on right now that people kind of don't know necessarily what they don't know.
I love that term.
It's a different thing, yeah.
It's a shame. And here's the thing. I am a strong student of history. I love history. People are not aware of our history much anymore.
And some of it gets rewritten too.
It does. And, you know, if we can't learn from our history, what are we going to learn from?
We haven't learned from our history. As a people, we really haven't learned from our history.
And that's
a shame.
It is. It's very frightening. You know what? We're out of time, and I still have stuff I want to ask you.
I could talk to you forever. That would not be a problem.
Well, I'm going to invite you back again, because I absolutely love chatting with you.
Well, thank you so much. I've had a lot of fun.
Well, listen, thank you for visiting with me today. I love it, and I know our audience is going to take away a lot of information. So tell people again where they can find you and where they can find A Year of Success.
Sure. They can go to burg.com, B-U-R-G.com, and while they're there, they can if they'd like to subscribe to our list, they can. They can go to the blog and subscribe. They can download some chapters of The Go-Giver, Endless Referrals, and some of the other books. They can connect with me on social media. Just everything's right on that home page. If they just go to the home page, plus they can subscribe to A Year of Success because they'll see the little link on there as well. So if they go to Burg, B-U-R-G.com, come on over, hang around, see what looks good to you, and we'll see you soon.
Nice. Well, I made a pretty cool graphic that I sent to Larry last night that you guys can use in your affiliate program. Just because I wanted to. I put it on my website, and I thought, oh, I'll share this with him. So
oh, very nice.
I can
good.
Send it to you if you like to.
Oh, I'd love it. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Listen, thank you so much again. I really appreciate everything you do, and thanks, everybody, for being with us here today. And the show will be available for download in about an hour, and I'll be back next Friday with John David Mann.
Ah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.